Good evening, everyone. Welcome to part two of the three-part series on headaches with myself, Dr. Justin Adams. If you are joining us for the first time tonight or today, whenever you may be listening to this, please do feel free to check out our previous podcast, in particular part one of the series, in order to get up to date with our previous information in which we did an introduction into headaches. Today, we'll be moving on to our more primary headaches, covering the most common types of headaches over the next two parts, in which we as chiropractors and which the public suffer from, and how we as healthcare practitioners can treat these conditions. Today, with the most important, but the most common, most debilitating headache, not common, because that's tension type headaches, but we'll be doing migraines. And today, once again, we have our headache guru, Dr. Moni Kruger. Hi, Moni. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks. It's awesome to be here.
So everyone, I'm sure all of you guys have, those who aren't chiropractors have heard of migraine before, but I think it is very important that we educate the public as chiropractors, as well as those who may be listening to this, that what a migraine actually is, what it entails, the different types of migraines that you may get, the symptoms, the signs, how to treat them, but also to understand, to recognize when you're having a migraine or when your patient is suffering from a migraine, and how best to help them. Moni, I'm going to hand this over to you, and you can take it away from us with regards to migraine.
Thanks. I prepared tonight on migraine because I think a lot of patients and sometimes practitioners will, I think the correct English term for it is conflate. They'll confuse a very bad headache with the word migraine. Migraine is a neurological disorder, which a really bad headache is a symptom of. And from our previous podcast, you'll remember that I very like pertinently said migraine falls under primary headache disorders because there is no cause, or we haven't really figured out what the cause is. The headache of a migraine is the disorder. So I'd like to start off sort of talking about the phases that we can see in a migraine and how that differs from our other common types of headaches, like you said, your tension type headaches. Migraine phases, there's between 3 to 4, sometimes they'll reference 5 phases in a migraine. And the first one is the premonitory phase. And that's when the patient starts feeling fatigue and drowsiness. They might experience mood changes, food cravings, neck discomfort, or even gastrointestinal issues. The funny thing, when I was reading these symptoms, when I was preparing, I thought that really sounds like PMS. And it's funny because migraine comes around and it has a very like big hormonal link. So once again, it just proves how we want to have sort of phases that we can see a disease in, but it's usually like a combination of things that work together that'll look like this. After the patient has these sort of symptoms, they might experience something called an aura. An aura is visual disturbances. It might be flashing lights. It also might be sensory. Sometimes patients can even have speech or language issues or motor issues. So these are neurological symptoms. They often get, if it's the first time that it happens to the patient, they might even think that they're having a stroke. So that's how bad these symptoms can be. So once again, you can have a migraine with aura or without aura. After the aura phase, which is usually the warning sign for a migraine patient that a bad headache is about to come on, that's when the headache phase starts. And that's usually a throbbing sort of sensation. And with migraines, patients generally find that the pain is only on one side of the head. And when I was comparing all of the different headaches, they kind of said that migraine usually happens on the same side. Patients will always have migraines on the same side with the pulsating quality. And we can go ahead and look at the symptoms in a bit. The headache usually only lasts between 4 to 72 hours. It's not the headache that hangs around for days. That will be something that looks more like a tension type headache. After the patient has the headache, there's a postdrome phase. That's after the headache has passed, the patient has concentration difficulty, they may have neck stiffness and fatigue. And then there's a fifth phase. I think it's interictal is the correct way of pronouncing it. There's an increased excitability to stimulus that happens in the final phase. So those are the phases that gets characterized in a migraine headache instead of something like a cervicogenic or a tension type headache, which looks different. So it goes through these phases.
Marnie, if we go through those phases from the beginning, you mentioned prior to the aura, you're getting a list of symptoms that may precede the aura. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So should a person having the aura, is that most common in migraines rather than without aura?
I'm not too sure in terms of the distribution between with or without aura. But the interesting thing about aura is sometimes it doesn't always follow through. So the patient might get an aura but no headache.
That's what I wanted to ask next. So is it possible, you mentioned that a headache is a symptom of a migraine. So
yes.
A migraine is a neurological condition. Is it possible to have a migraine without a headache?
I mean, would you call it a migraine if the patient had an aura? So they've had the visual disturbances and all of those things, possibly.
Correct.
And then they have the fatigue and the concentration difficulty and that sort of thing afterwards. I'm not a neurologist, so these things are not, like, this is a very heavy question. But I do know, even from personal experience, that you can have an aura and no headache. But what a lot of migraine sufferers do is when they get their aura phase, they will already be implementing the things that they know that will prevent it. So those sort of like rescue packets and stuff that they get from their doctors or pharmacists.
Sure. So in order to break the cycle, the neurological process happening, in order to prevent the headache coming through.
That's it.
Okay. It's very interesting that you mentioned that theoretically you could be suffering from a migraine without the headache if you go according to what the science says.
Have you ever heard of a stomach migraine?
A stomach migraine? No, I have not.
Literally, it's the gastrointestinal issues but no headache.
So a person may experience these symptoms, go from these gastrointestinal symptoms to an aura, thinking, what is happening to me? Not get a headache and just kind of feel absolutely broken afterwards, fatigued, miserable sensory issues, and then it's over, thinking, I don't know what happened to me, let me go to the doctor, and not really know that they actually may be the start of becoming a migraine sufferer.
That's it. So a stomach migraine is literally, it's migraine without the headache symptom. It's stomach and gastrointestinal.
So what type of symptoms? So are we looking at constipation, diarrhea, cramping, bloating?
Abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite. Stomach, abdominal pain is the main one.
So if we look at the allopathic way or the traditional medical way of treating a migraine, is that your general practitioner from experience would advise them, or a pharmacist if they've gone to a pharmacy without seeing a doctor, that once you start to experience that aura, then you want to take the migraine cocktail, as they call it, or a migraine pack.
Yeah.
And in order to stop that headache, is that still the number one treatment for a migraine today, from your knowledge?
So as far as I know, there are triptans that gets prescribed as the main one, and that's a drug that targets serotonin receptors. Yeah, that's something that you'll need a prescription for. But a lot of people use combination over-the-counter drug when they start getting aura, and I think that's what you're referring to, a migraine cocktail. There's also obviously a difference between acute, or they call it abortive treatments, and preventative or prophylactic treatments. So some people have such bad migraines that they take a medication for it every single day to prevent it from coming on.
So they can experience migraines that often.
Yeah.
With the, you mentioned that migraine is a neurological condition, and it's still is it fair to say a relatively misunderstood condition with regards to its origins?
Yes, we don't know why migraines happen. I think every so often there's a new theory. There's the vascular theory that the vasodilation or the expanding of the vessels in the brain is what causes migraine. But it might just be a feature of it. I think that's where people are standing now in terms of it, that we can see that there is opening up of the blood vessels in the brain when there is a migraine happening, but we don't know if that is what causes it. You know, when we look at, when we try and find the root cause, you know what I'm saying? People always want to find the root cause of their migraine, yeah.
And there's lots of theories as to what triggers these signs that that you'd notice on studies, where, like you mentioned, the dilation of the blood vessels or constriction of blood vessels with regards to diet, so to speak. And I know you'll probably cover that
more. So the big thing that I would love for listeners to appreciate is the difference between cause and trigger. So a simple example, it's like we don't know what the cause for a migraine is, but we know what triggers migraines.
Okay.
We know what puts people at risk of developing migraines, but we don't know what causes it. It's like your back hurts when you get into the car. It's not because you're getting into the car that's causing your backache.
Sure. So we as the scientific community understand and know what the triggers for migraines are, but we don't understand the cause just yet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Would you like to touch on, for my listeners, about these most common triggers that you have noticed or have come across?
Yeah. So I think part of our jobs as chiropractors is to screen our patients for migraine triggers. It's very simple. Usually, well, sometimes depends on the patient's journey. I would just go right ahead and ask them, do you know what triggers your migraines? The funny thing about these triggers are they are not very reliable. So you'll find the patient will say, today I can have a little bit of cheese, no problem. Tomorrow I have a little bit of cheese and I have the worst migraine of my life. So there's definite dietary factors. So certain foods and beverages, alcohol, especially red wine, has been implicated, caffeine, aged cheeses, like I said, and then foods that contain nitrites and MSGs. Those are, and that's a list from the World Health Organization about foods that can trigger migraine.
Then, all the good food, the good stuff.
All the fun stuff. Yeah.
All the fun stuff.
Especially here in the Western Cape, you know, talking to people in a bit of wine.
It's not a great place to live if you're a migraine sufferer.
No, not at all. It's very boring. So, on the flip side, stress is a big one. Emotional stress has been most frequently reported in people that have migraine. And that is, it's a hard one because when was the last time you asked a patient, are you stressed? And they said no. Every single person suffers from some level of stress. Even if someone enjoys their job, that can still be stressful to them. So some of the other things that we need to screen for, we mentioned that before the call, was hormonal changes. So when we circle back to how do you know if you're having migraines and tracking your migraines, ladies should also be tracking their menstrual cycles. I think it's when your estrogen drops. I'm not a menstrual cycle guru. I think it would be good to have someone on to talk about that specifically. But there's around ovulation and around your period, that's when you're most likely to have migraines. So you can start preemptively sort of figuring out if that's a factor for you, if you track your menstrual cycle. Then sleeping disturbances is a big one. Sleep and pain go together hand in hand, as we know. But with migraines, both lack of sleep and excessive sleep can both be triggers for migraine. And it's kind of the funniest thing, because when I go on the support groups, people will, they know this list and they'll know, like, if I sleep too little, I'm going to have a migraine. If I'm going to sleep too much, I'm going to have a migraine. And it's so debilitating to these people. Some other things that can trigger headaches are environmental factors, bright lights, loud sounds, strong smells. Some of these patients will not even wash their clothes in normal detergent because that can trigger their headaches. Wow. It's actually, you know, weather changes, barometric pressure fluctuations is something. So the migraine tracking apps that you can find, like Migraine Buddy, some of those things will even tell you that there has been a drop in barometric pressure and that you could be predisposed in getting a migraine. Physical exertion is one of the triggers, and that's very unique to migraine, where physical activity is one of the triggers of migraine. I think my personal experience is exercise tends to improve my headache because I'm not a traditional migraine sufferer. I'm more along tension type cervicogenic. That's my favorite. We spoke about medication overuse headaches. I don't know if it's exactly a trigger, but it will make your headaches more often if you have medication overuse headaches. And then another dietary factor along with the certain foods is also skipping meals. That could also, you know, trigger a headache. So these triggers will vary among individuals, but it can also vary from day to day. And how I explain that to my patients is it's an analogy that's all, it's been used more around the internet and literature about migraine is like a little cup of water. And different triggers is adding a little bit more water to that cup. So let's say that you had a little bit of cheese, you're dehydrated, and now the barometric pressure drops. All of that's adding water into the cup, and that will cause the cup to spill over, and then you have a migraine. So that's why some days your triggers will look like one thing, and another day it might look like something else. So if you're suffering from migraines, getting the basics done, like making sure you're hydrated, adjusting your sleep schedule, those basic things, making sure that they're on check, will make your cup a little bit bigger so that the dietary factors and that sort of thing won't be as much of a bother.
Marnie, I want to touch back on the hormone-related migraines affecting female population. We don't know that, us personally don't know the science about it, but it obviously has to do with regards to some sort of fluctuations in the estrogen levels in the body. Now, have you come across what the main treatment for that type of migraine is? Because my experience with a patient that has come to me, and I can send, based on my history, simply you can determine that this sounds like a hormonal related migraine or / headache, they tend to get better with treatment. I've noticed there's an improvement in the headache, maybe the intensity, or in the migraines less frequent. So, and we're going to touch base just now on how chiropractors and how our treatment can assist migraine sufferers. But the mainstay of treatment for hormone-related migraine, is that just simply controlling estrogen levels via contraceptive pill or hormone therapy?
I am not too sure on how best to approach a hormone headache because it's not so much in our scope to recommend these things.
Sure.
For me, what I hope for a patient that has a hormonal headache is that they consult with their gynae on a plan or that they have that abortive medication at hand because I think oral contraceptive is a way that a lot of patients can manage their hormone levels. And it is a possibility that that would be something that they can do to manage their migraines.
Now that we've covered a lot of the triggers of migraines, one thing I can deduce from it, there's a lot of lifestyle related triggers. It's a lifestyle related condition, which can be controlled if you are able to recognize your triggers, control your triggers and avoid those triggers, and you don't have to suffer from migraine. Now, should a patient come into a doctor's rooms or chiropractor's rooms, you recognize there's migraines, you diagnose them with migraines, how are we as chiropractors, what are we looking for on a physical examination specifically to know that, you know what, I think we can help this person with their pain?
So what we touched on in the previous episode was that likely this person will be suffering from more than one type of headache. So it would be very obvious that the patient has a migraine because they're going to go through those phases. It's going to be on one side. Yeah. It's going to not last more than a couple of days, pulsating quality, worse with exercise, nausea and vomiting, sensitivity to light, sensitivity to loud sounds. Those, I think the diagnosis is purely sort of history when it comes to migraine. When we do our examination, we're looking for contributing factors, neck stiffness from all of the usual suspects that cause headaches. That's what we're going to find on physical examination. But with migraine, when you look at the International Classification for Headache Disorders, there's the episodic migraine, there's chronic migraine, there's migraine with aura, migraine without aura. There's like so many lists, and you can as soon as your patient starts tracking, or if you want to track your own headaches, you can start looking at which one of the headache disorders best suits it, because there's always at the end of each criteria, use this diagnosis if there's no other diagnosis that works better, which sounds obvious, but it is the truth. So the question was, what do you find on physical examination with a migraine patient? Probably not much, I think.
Okay. But you have mentioned a very important part, is that a migraine sufferer may be suffering from migraines as well. And we'll come back to migraines being a neurological condition, and we remind our listeners, as well as a different type of headache, whether it's cervicogenic cluster or tension type headaches. So when a patient walks into your rooms and starts to tell you symptoms, and you kind of go, they're overlapping a little bit. And they, as we know, a lot of people will just associate a very bad headache with a migraine. And it's an important question to ask, well, why do you think, I ask to say, what makes your headache a migraine? Tell me what symptoms are you experiencing that makes this a migraine? So I find that with treatment and on, like you said, physical examination, we may be finding signs or symptoms in the body or presentation in the body, whether it's tension or joint dysfunction or restriction, that may be associated with a cervicogenic or a tension type headache that is just making them headaches more common. And some days they're getting migraines in between them, and they're all grouping it into one. So when we start to treat that and they come back and they say, oh, my frequency of my headaches are down, the intensity is down, but every 3 or 4 weeks, I still get this really, really bad headache and I vomit and nausea. And then we can kind of identify, well, there we go. You may have been suffering from two different types of headaches.
That's it.
Fantastic. So if we as chiropractors are seeing a patient that is primarily a migraine sufferer, what is your advice, provided your examination comes back relatively clear, there are no issues that you can find, and the number one diagnosis for you is, for example, migraine of aura, what is your next step in managing that patient?
If they have a pure, I suspect they only have a migraine.
Correct.
I probably would refer them to a neurologist if manual therapy doesn't work. I almost never have seen a patient with a true migraine that doesn't have some sort of neck tension that's contributing to it, or some other headache disorder that's contributing to the amount of days that that patient has headaches.
So there may be other structures that are making their migraine seem a lot worse. Is that what you're saying? Dysfunction in the neck, shoulders, muscles that are not happy, that with treatment, the intensity or frequency of the migraine decreases. Is that what you're able to see in practice?
I do think in the literature, it's hard to distinguish, because there are some research studies that suggest that chiropractic works to reduce migraine frequency, intensity, all that jazz. But then it has to come down to, did that patient only really suffer from migraine, or do they have headaches and other different type of headaches too?
Correct.
So I do think, because the general population and some will say that a really bad headache is a migraine, it's hard to trust the literature on migraine itself. That's how I always look at it, in that lens, where it's like, was that truly a migraine, or was it cervicogenic? Like I also before the call told you that migraine has been around for centuries. It's been seen in literature forever, basically, since we could write. But cervicogenic's only been really appreciated in the last 100 years. So how many people thought they had migraines in the past, but they really had cervicogenic?
And no chiropractors to help them.
And no chiropractors to help them.
So just based on, I think, like you said, the literature is still out there, so to speak, and there's a lot more research that can still come out with regard to migraines. From experience as a chiropractor for myself, if there have been cases, and it's not that I'm claiming that the treatment works, but there are cases where what I've identified as a migraine headache, and you know what, maybe that person was suffering with a different type of headache as well, but they don't experience migraines for a long time afterwards without any advice from myself with regards to their triggers. And all I've done is done manual therapy on them. So
yeah.
I think that opens up the door to say that there's a lot more research that we as chiropractors can do surrounding our treatment and migraine.
It's an interesting point, because when I do research, I often will use different terms to speak about manual therapy in general, because I think it's very important for us to say that chiropractic is not a treatment method. Chiropractic is a profession. So are we talking about dry needling? Are we talking about joint adjustment? Are we talking about mobilization? Are we talking about home advice? Which is all encompassed. I think most chiropractors will do a lot of those things in a consultation, but it's not every chiropractor's conviction that chiropractic is sort of a one thing. It's a profession. So when we look at like what works, what are you doing? Are you needling? Are you adjusting? Are you, when you say you treat the patient?
Well, based on the examination, you've answered a question that makes me go, okay, well, I've looked at the common muscles associated with pain in the head. So your trapezius muscles, the muscles around the occiput, the posterior cervical musculature, and treated it appropriately with whether it's dry needling, shockwaves in the area. So like you said, all commonly found affected areas that are associated with cervicogenic and tension type headaches. But that being said, if we're providing a treatment and, you know, I find movement restriction or a segmental dysfunction in the neck and I correct that through an adjustment, in my head, I'm going, why is the migraine going away? Why is those episodes with the aura? Why is the vomiting and nausea associated headache with the aura? They notice it, they get their prodrome. Why is that going away with my treatment where we've done nothing else? And that's where I'm asking myself, do we as chiropractors need to do more research into this and see what does the effect? Because it is a neurological condition, as you say, and the work we do is neurological. So it's an interesting thing. And perhaps if there's anyone out there, any other chiropractors that know a bit more about this or have a more experience with treating migraine sufferers, if they could give us more information and let us know what they found in practice. So
because when we look at like what effect does manual therapy have, we know that it has an effect on the receptors. We know that there's modulation in the central nervous system. There's exogenous opioid release, all of those sort of things. So there is an effect of manual therapy in general, not chiropractic only, on the central nervous system. And does that have an effect on this neurological condition called migraine?
Correct.
So that is a very, very interesting thing to think about. But yeah, when I treat patients, I don't go straight off the bat and try and change their whole life, because people don't change. You're going to tell them you need to stop stressing, this. You're going to waste your breath at the end of the day. So I completely agree with you. When I have a patient, I screen them for red flags. I will then treat them twice before I try and make any behavioral changes. Because if I can do the work for you, it's going to be better for you. It's going to be better for me, because that's what you want. You want me to help you. But if that doesn't work, you have to gain resilience over time with behavioral and lifestyle changes.
Yeah, a lot of people, and I can understand from my side, the migraine sufferers, they get to a point where they want it gone, and they want it either all gone or it's not gone at all. So patience within the patients is so crucial when it comes to treating these people and telling them that these things may take time to change. We can't just do everything in one. We have to implement a strategy or a treatment protocol with you that's going to have a longer lasting effect, and then manage it accordingly. Because the usual stresses, as you did mention, emotional stress is such a huge factor in migraine. Emotional stress doesn't go anywhere. You know, you're still going to work. You're still going to sit your computer in there. You're still going to deal with relationships. And you're still going to eat food and make mistakes with the type of food you eat. So those aren't going anywhere. But if we know that we can help, we need to educate the patient that sometimes these things may return as well. But that's not to say that the treatment hasn't helped, but rather that these things need to be looked after going on with time. And we do make mistakes when, as patients of migraine sufferers, we are exposed to these stresses and sometimes we can't avoid them.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, what your patient is looking for is reassurance that it's not something serious. And even if you don't solve their problem completely, a reduction in frequency in headaches is going to be so valued by any patient. But they do say in the literature that patients don't actually know how often they suffer from headaches. So they might be thinking, I have headaches every single day, when that's not really true. Or, no, it's not that often, but then they actually have headaches 3, 4, 5 times a week. And that's just their normal headache, like you said.
Now that you mention it, it's very common to hear through a history taking. how often do you suffer from headaches? Every day, all day, every day. And in your head, you're going, how are you alive? How have you not ripped your head off? So I think when you have them for so long and it's so chronic, it just feels like it's every single day that you're just suffering, regardless of the 3 hours of relief you may have or the 3 days of relief. It's just so common that it just feels like it's affected everything in your life.
Yeah, people's lives are so full though. Even though you have the best intention to get this patient to make behavioral and lifestyle changes, you need to be really realistic with what that patient can do. Because it's like, if that patient is a young mother, for example, and she's just gone back to work and all of those things, like giving her a ton of things to do will not actually benefit the patient.
Yeah, 100%. So what we can take away from this conversation is that as chiropractors, we need a structured, tiered approach into treating patients and make it known to them that these things will take time and you're not going to rush the process.
Can't make it quicker than it wants to happen.
Sure.
Any sort of diagnosis on that criteria, it sometimes needs like 3 months of headache tracking to get an accurate diagnosis. And if you're tracking your headaches, you will also know that your treatment's working.
And that's something we will speak about in the next podcast about your little headache, mini headache diary that you developed, which we'll be able to assist in management of patients. But it is very, very crucial, like you say, in order to keep some form of a headache diary or recollection of your headaches with regards to intensity, frequency, and just having that so you can show a patient, look here, at your own diary, your headaches are improving. They are getting better. And this is your own writing. Because sometimes they, like I said, they want it all or they want nothing. It's either the headaches are gone or they're still there, regardless of how bad they are. So you need some sort of measurement approach.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of cool outcome-based measures. And maybe we can talk about it next time. How can you help that patient who seemingly does not know exactly how bad their headaches are? But when we get back to headache tracking, iPhone's health app has a really cool way that you can track your headaches very simply. Yeah. I do that often to the patient. Yeah. So you just it's literally on the native health app on your iPhone. You can track symptoms and then it can like export it to PDF. If you don't want to use any fancy apps, because there's a lot of apps for headache tracking, but I laugh at it sometimes because if someone's really suffering from migraine, they're not looking at a screen.
It's the last thing they want to do.
Yeah. So light sensitivity and all that going to get. So it's a challenge. And that's why I actually went on and made a paper one, because I just thought I want to make it as simple as possible for someone with a headache to complete it. And I don't want it to look like a screen.
Perfect. Before we end off, I want if you are aware or have any knowledge of the DACE piercing for the migraine.
I do know about it. I do know it doesn't do well in research. I don't really like, what is the they can't do like a double blind, very high quality research on it, because obviously the person will know if they have piercing, right?
Yeah.
Some people swear by it.
Yeah.
Some people, but I think it's desperation that makes people want to get it, because they've like tried everything. They don't want to take medication anymore, whatever the case may be. Then they go for it. And I don't really know what the rates are, but once again, I look at the community support groups and it's 50-50. Where people said, yes, it works for me. I had a tattoo artist the other day in my office and I asked him about it. He said he actually has a client who gets one, keeps it in for a little while, takes it out, lets it, the hole grows closed, and then she gets a new one like every couple of months because it works for her. So now I'm wondering, is it placebo? And I don't think we need to ever discount the fact that any of these treatments will... There's placebo always in sort of like in the room, in the situation.
Yeah.
A lot of times I wonder if, I know we need to wrap it up, but I wonder if, because chiropractors are always willing to try, patients just want you to try something for them and be brave for them.
Yeah. And we often get patients as chiropractors, you know, you're my last hope for my headaches and nothing's helped. Even people coming to us after they've been to the neurologist, in fact. And all of those people have not for things that we are able to assess for that's unique within our approach. So
they come for something else.
Yes. Thanks, Marnie, for today. I think all of us have got a decent understanding of migraine headaches. And I really hope that this podcast has given or contributed some knowledge that you might not have been aware of with regards to migraine headaches. Next week, we will definitely, with our podcast next week, or when the next one does come out, we will cross-reference with migraines as we cover tension type and cervicogenic headache, because there is a large overlap between the three headaches and their presentation at times. So please, if you have any questions, please pop them in the comments below. Feel free to email myself at dradams@carsacouncil.co.za. And thank you, Marnie, once again for joining us today, and we will chat soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to the last section.
Great. Cheers, everyone.